from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Supreme Court yesterday heard arguments in the case of ABC versus Aereo. ABC is, of course, the network television giant, backed up in this case by every other big broadcaster in America. Aereo, a little startup company that grabs broadcast signals from the networks and lets you stream them for $8 to $12 a month. Combine Aereo with Netflix or iTunes, and you could get a lot of what cable offers for a fraction of the cost. Is that innovation? Is that theft? A big ruling depends on that. And a big ruling yesterday on affirmative action and racial preferences in college admissions. The court upheld Michigan's ban. This hour, the future of broadcasting, the future of affirmative action, and the high court. First, Leanna Baker joins me from New York. She covers the media industry for Reuters, has been following the Aereo story. Leanna, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thorny, tough issue for the court yesterday, and there were comments from the bench that seemed to be open to the arguments of both sides. What makes this such a difficult case for the court, Leanna?
I think the justices are really concerned about the implications of their decision. There's a lot of buzzy issues here, like cloud computing, which came up a lot yesterday. And they're worried that any decision on Aereo could have effects there.
So let's start with television and Aereo. Why are the big networks so upset about Aereo?
So here we have a little company that's really threatening a lot of their money, their revenue. It's really kind of a David versus Goliath situation. And a lot of consumers are happy with this new technology, but the question is it legal? And the broadcasters say, no, it's not legal to take these free broadcast signals and retransmit them.
Aereo puts up these antenna farms, little dime-sized antennae. You can sign up for 8 to 12 bucks a month. They're in 11 cities now, I guess. And what? They capture the broadcast signal and then stream it on to you, either live or that you can have it later.
Exactly. And the issue is that Aereo says that everyone who uses the service has access to one antenna. So it's kind of a private performance that they're not sending out these signals widely to everyone, and that's why they think they don't need to pay for it. So one of the issues that came up in the court is whether streaming from one tiny antenna is a private or public performance. So that's a part of copyright law that came up.
If it were public performance, then they would, understanding law, be required to pay. What are the revenues that the networks would miss out on if the court rules for Aereo here?
So broadcasters last year generated about $3 billion in revenue from something we call retransmission fees. It's a little jargony, but basically CBS, NBC, Fox, they make money from cable companies like Time Warner Cable and Comcast, who are putting those signals on the air for their consumers.
And, of course, there's there are ads as well. And with Aereo, I guess, if you're recording this or they're recording it for you via your little antenna, you could jump past those ads.
Well, that's not too different from technology that already exists, like the DVR. And if you're watching Aereo live, just like you would watch a broadcast in your home from bunny ears or an antenna, you can't skip ahead to the commercials.
Leanna, what's really going on here? I mean, this is a little startup, but I'm reading here that behind it is mega-rich media mogul Barry Diller. I've even seen this described as Barry Diller versus Les Moonves, head of CBS. What's the big play here?
So I think Barry Diller likes to rile people up, and he is one of the big investors backing this venture, and he was actually one of the founders of Fox. So he comes from the broadcasting world, and he wants to shake things up. He's been working in the internet space for a few years now. Les Moonves, the CBS CEO, has been pretty outspoken, saying if Aereo prevails, if the Supreme Court finds it legal, we're going to pull our broadcast signals, or we might go internet only. So there's been a lot of talk about what the broadcasters could do if this survives the court.
What was the chatter? You cover the industry. What was the chatter after the court's hearing on this yesterday? Was there a sense of which way they're leaning? Do network broadcasters feel confident or not?
From the people I spoke with who were in the courtroom, nobody left really knowing which way it's going to go. I think that's a lot of the time what happens in the Supreme Court. I think both sides felt confident. Aereo seemed to feel good about the fact that the justices asked a ton of questions about cloud computing. Aereo has brought up that Google and Apple and Microsoft and all these companies are kind of behind them because a ruling against Aereo threatens that industry. On the other hand, some experts think that the court is just trying to find a way to rule where it doesn't have to bring in that whole area of technology. So maybe those questions were just directed to the attorneys to try to figure out a way to get around that.
Justice Breyer, among others, worried yesterday about innovation more broadly beyond Aereo, depending on the court's ruling. Make clear for us how this might impact cloud computing, Leanna.
It sounds a little confusing, but Aereo is actually a cloud-based technology. Your antenna is being stored in a warehouse, not on top of your roof. So Aereo argues that accessing TV through that cloud-based technology is kind of what gives you access to this. So Chet Kanoja, the CEO of Aereo, says that downloading a Taylor Swift song through iTunes and then accessing it later on Google Drive, that's the same exact thing as watching The Voice on NBC using Aereo, that you have the right to that and you could access it whenever you want. There has been previous rulings related to that.
So be careful if you drop Aereo. You might also drop iTunes or Dropbox or all kinds of stuff in the cloud.
So those companies are concerned, but some experts I spoke with said that the justices can do whatever they want. They can rule just narrowly against Aereo and not bring in that whole argument and, you know, all of that technology. And those were some of the concerns yesterday. The justices really spent a lot of time trying to probe the attorneys for how to get around cloud computing, which they called very difficult.
A technical education for the high court here and for the whole country as we watch. We're going to look at the legal arguments behind all of this. Leanna Baker with Reuters in New York, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
In an interview earlier this week, CNN's Brian Stetler asked Aereo founder and CEO Chet Kanoja about the broadcasters who say Aereo is stealing their TV signal. Kanoja says it's not theft.
It's consumers' right. They have a right to pick the technology they want to use as long as they control it.
Whether it's an antenna or Aereo.
It's an Aereo antenna, Radio Shack antenna, or RCA antenna, or a TiVo DVR. There is no prohibition. Absolutely.
And is it protected private performance or is it public performance when you've got thousands using the service? Talking with reporters yesterday, a lawyer for the broadcasters, Paul, ABC and others, Paul Clement, said Aereo infringed on copyright law by selling something it gets for free.
A service cannot provide live TV over the Internet to thousands of paying strangers without engaging in a public performance.
Aereo lawyer David Frederick said he believes the justices understand that the company's services do not infringe copyright law.
We're cautiously optimistic based on the way the hearing went today that the court understood that when a person watching over-the-air broadcast television in his or her home is engaging in a private performance and not a public performance, that would implicate the Copyright Act.
So is it innovation? Is it theft? Joining me now from Philadelphia is Michael Carrier, professor at Rutgers University School of Law in Camden, New Jersey, one of 36 law professors who signed an amicus brief supporting Aereo. He's the author of In Innovation for the 21st Century, Harnessing the Power of Intellectual Property and Antitrust Law. Michael Carrier, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from New York, Eleanor Lackman joins us, partner at the law firm Cowan, DeBates, Abrahams & Shepard. She wrote the amicus brief on behalf of the Copyright Alliance supporting ABC in its suit against Aereo. Eleanor Lackman, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's at the heart of your argument, Eleanor?
The heart of the argument, and of course, I'll have to give the caveat that right here to educate your listeners, I'm not speaking on behalf of any of these, any of my clients or anybody else involved. These are really sort of views. But right, as to give a sense of what the argument was about, the idea is that when a commercial enterprise comes out and develops itself in a way that essentially moves into an established marketplace for licensing, which is the retransmission of broadcast signals.
Which is what cable companies do.
Yeah. Exactly. It just like cable companies, should pay for that. Now, understandably, there have been arguments that this is private use or it's the cloud or whatever, and we can go into that separately. But the idea here is that this is a for-profit company that is seeking to do exactly what cable companies do and which Congress has held cable companies must do, which is pay for retransmission. And the idea is that those who provide this valuable material that's broadcast or retransmitted shouldn't be cut out of the equation. that a license is required and that this is the exact type of use that the copyright laws are designed to protect.
Michael Carrier, the word around the court from supporters of ABC and other big broadcasters was theft. What do you say to that?
Theft is always bandied about. Any time that you have copyright holders who worry about their things being used without their permission, theft is a powerful word. It evokes powerful connotations in the audience. But let's keep in mind here that just because you call something theft doesn't mean that it is theft. There's a lot of copyright law here that the broadcasters don't have on their side when you look at public performance, when you look at reproduction rights, when you look at retransmission fees. So just by calling it theft is not the answer.
If I create a television show and Aereo hands it on for free and makes money on that, I make nothing. Is that fair?
So the question is, what is a retransmission fee? And the law is perfectly clear under the Copyright Act that you don't have to pay royalties within a local market. Section 111, Section 122 deal with cable, deal with satellite, make perfectly clear you do not have to pay within a local market.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking right now about the Supreme Court looking at the future of television, rights, innovation, and a little company called Aereo. Eleanor Lachman is with us from Cowan Debates, Abrahams and Shepard in New York. She authored an amicus brief on behalf of the Copyright Alliance. They're supporting ABC versus startup called Aereo. Michael Carrier at Rutgers University School of Law says, hey, wait a minute, he's one of 36 law professors who signed an amicus brief supporting Aereo. Big debate here. Michael, Eleanor, I want to get some of the court's argument and questioning yesterday from you. A couple of callers first. Beth in Boston. Hi, Beth. You're on the air. What's your experience?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a cord cutter recently, probably a couple of months ago. I became a cord cutter.
No more cable for you. You've cut the cable cord.
No more cable for me. Our cable bill was about $200 a month, which was just crazy. And we were always like, there's nothing on. So I cut the cable. I pay for like this high-speed internet, and I have Hulu Plus, Netflix, and Aereo. And between those three, my watching experience is so much better, and it saves me about $100 a month. I think I pay $24 a month or something like that for the three services.
So, Beth, let me ask you. So you don't like what cable companies were charging, but do you feel like a pirate using Aereo?
Not at all, because I totally believe their argument. So I, you know, being a subscriber, I get their emails, and their argument is accurate. I had seriously considered putting an antenna out on my roof to see if I could get over the air broadcast. Hulu Plus and Netflix already covered most of it, but you know, you're really missing the live stuff when you have those services.
Sports and events, the Super Bowl, all that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Oscars.
The Oscars,
and,
yes.
And, it's equivalent to my own private antenna. I just don't get why that is any different than me putting an antenna or TiVoing. TiVo provides, you know, you can record and stream it back. So I honestly don't see it as any different.
We've got it. There's the market demand, and we also hear you've got like $100 a month interest in seeing it that way. But I take your point, Beth, and that's exactly their argument. One more right here, and we'll look at it. Jahan in Chicago. Jahan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
You know, I think that Aereo is not doing a justice here. I would actually rule in the favor of ABC. I'm not in law, but I think to use the argument that if you download something from iTunes and then play it over Google Drive, that is the same thing. That is completely false, because when you take your own personal labor and your own personal investment and you're spending the time to do it, fine. And you're not actually going out and reselling it, fine.
Yeah.
It's absolutely your right to do that. But when you actually are taking somebody else's labor, somebody else's product that is being streamed, and you're just basically borrowing it and restreaming it, I think you should have to pay the restreaming fees. And this whole micro antenna business, I mean, it's intellectual dishonesty. I mean, come on, seriously. if an individual wants to put up their own antenna and go through the labor and the intensive, you know, technology of rebroadcasting their own signal, then go ahead and do it for yourself. But you can't do it and then redistribute it for thousands of other people and charge them fee for it. I think that's It's just a completely different animal.
Gian, I appreciate your call from Chicago. Michael Carrier, how about it? Justice Roberts, Chief Justice, was kind of on Gihan's wavelength yesterday when he said in court to Aereo's representative, your technological model is based solely on circumventing legal prohibitions that you don't want to comply with. You've set up all these tiny little antenna. You put them in local markets exactly to weave your way through the law, but kind of miss the intent of it. What about that argument, Michael?
So the problem there is that you're imputing this really bad motive to someone that is complying with the law. They are complying with copyright law when they set up their system so that it does not violate copyright law. And in addition, and here's what didn't come up at all argument, there are real benefits to the consumer. As we heard from the call, there are real benefits to the consumer when, for example, you have the small and independent broadcasters weighing in saying they can reach an audience they can't otherwise reach, people that can't afford cable or satellite or home viewing equipment. This can be an expanding of the audience. And again, we're just talking about retransmission fees. There's no big picture copyright issue here at all. There's no innovation issue here at all that we're worried about all the stuff disappearing. This is not a problem.
When Ruth Bader Ginsburg says to Aereo, you're the only player so far that doesn't pay any royalties at any stage, I mean, she's suggesting that they're mooching.
But you go to Radio Shack and you rent an antenna and they don't pay any fees and it's clear. And the Sony case from 1984 in the Supreme Court made clear that consumers have the right to stream this over-the-air TV for free, to record it, to watch it later. You're allowed to do it yourself with your own antenna and DVR. So now it's just a little easier. It's in the cloud. We are in the 21st century, by the way. So it's a little easier, a little more efficient. And now all of a sudden it's completely different. That doesn't make any sense.
Eleanor, there's the argument out there that we've been down this road before 30 years ago with videotaping television. And there was a big legal case about that. Broadcasters said this is going to kill us if people are videoing our stuff. We've got to shut this down. The court went the other way. And look at all the innovation that's come out of that realm in the years since.
Well, I think we're dealing with very different technologies and different issues. When you buy a standalone item, be it an antenna or a VCR, you store it in your house. There are no transmissions going on. There's no continuing relationship going on. What the Aereo case is about is this idea that retransmissions can be made by a commercial enterprise on an ongoing basis to serve the subscribers. And this idea of putting an antenna on the roof, it's not your antenna. It's a shared antenna. The extra antennas are not necessary. And in fact, the district judge in the Aereo case said if it wasn't for this one decision from the Second Circuit, the appellate court in 2008, this would be illegal. So it's not Sony Betamax all over again, because we're not talking about consumers buying a standalone product in their home. It's about a company that comes in and does just like what Beth mentioned. She mentioned Hulu Plus and Netflix. Those are licensed. Aereo is, and just as Justice Ginsburg mentioned, Aereo is the only one that doesn't pay a license fee. They are competitors of these enterprises. The other enterprises pay license fees, and if Aereo gets a special exception, why is that the case? It's not you buy technology and you're done. It is an ongoing relationship with an antenna that you never really own.
Michael Carrier, what about it? Eleanor says it's not Sony Betamax all over again. Is it? Is this comparable to that decision, that dynamic 30 years ago?
It certainly is, because we're talking about innovation here. You look at the Sony decision, very close decision, 5-4. It took the court two terms to decide it. And that decision found that a VCR did not violate the copyright laws. Guess what? As a result, we had a VCR market. We had a DVD market. At the time, there was a lot of panic. This is the end of the movies as we know. But no, they got more money through DVDs than they did through the actual theater. You look at the Cablevision case. And so there, the discussion was, oh, well, if not for this case. Well, guess what? The Cablevision case, which was a case of a few years ago where the Second Circuit in New York said that a remote storage DVR was okay, was incredibly important for innovation. And so you have one empirical study finding that $728 million to $1.3 billion were invested in cloud computing as a result of that decision. On the other hand, you look at courts that go the wrong way. If this court decides against Aereo, innovators are going to be scared. The court that went against the Napster case, I interviewed all the music CEOs and record record label and technology and venture capitalists, and they said that the Napster decision, which found that peer-to-peer technology violated the law, dried up innovation for a decade. It was a graveyard. It was a wasteland. No one would go near it. And so that's the problem. When you look at these technologies, of course they challenge the existing business models, but that doesn't mean they violate the copyright laws. That just means they're pushing the grounds of innovation.
Listeners are paying close attention here. Let's go to Rick in New Orleans. Rick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, look, back in the 80s, there was a court case. The Supreme Court ruled people had these scramblers picking up the satellite picture from, you know, from the TV transmission from the satellites. The Supreme Court ruled that if the signal comes onto your property, it belongs to you. These people at Aereo, they're just trying to make a fast buck. That's all.
Rick, how do you get your television? Are you a cable subscriber?
I have an antenna on my roof. I can watch the Super Bowl, the Oscars, whatever else.
And you,
I don't need to any of that stuff.
It's your own antenna. How long have you had it? Where'd you get it?
I've been having it for 10 years. I got it from one of the local electronic stores, and it. I got a good one. I paid about $110 for it, and it's still there. It's still working.
So you're happy to have your own antenna, old school, analog, but Aereo looks like a fast buck play to you.
Yeah, but I have a digital converter that I bought also, and I get the digital signal from the antenna. You don't need a digital antenna. All you need is just something to pick up a TV signal.
Rick, we've got it, and we picture you there with your old-school antenna on the rooftop. One more right here, James in Brookline, Massachusetts. James, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm an Aereo subscriber. I use it. I live in Brookline, a densely populated area, in a condo building where I'm unable to put an antenna on the roof. And I went through purchasing all of the top-of-the-line indoor antennas that I could find, and none of them picked up strong enough signals. And I found that Aereo is the product that I need.
So why not just get cable and get your network television that way, James?
Well, cable, it's a monopoly. I only have a choice of one company.
Yeah.
There's not even competition between one. I have to get Comcast, and the price of it to get basic service and channels that I don't want is upwards of $80 or $90 a month.
So you're looking for a solution, and Aereo is that solution for you. One more right here. Thank you, James. Dave in Des Moines, Iowa. You're on, Dave.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Real brief as I can. I'm an author. My new novel, The Mayhem Wrangler, just got the nod from Hollywood to write a script, so I'm writing a script for free.
All right.
I'm way upstream, and these guys are way, way downstream. And I say to them, if you guys think you should get this content for free, I got $5 in my wallet. I got to buy lunch, and I don't have enough money for diapers tonight. So give the sucker a break here. Come on. That's it, Tom. Thanks.
We got it, Dave. Michael, how about it? Got a nod for his book from Hollywood that could end up on TV, and he's wondering why Aereo and the viewer at the other end of that chain should get it for free.
Well, it's not for free when its retransmission fees are completely free under the copyright statute. Again, Section 111 deals with cable. Section 122 deals with satellite. Says that you do not have to pay royalties when you're rebroadcasting within the local market. Let's take a step back.
In other words, that's for free.
Well, yeah, that's allowed under the statute, but that's not about innovation. This is about the Cable Act. This is about the FCC. If we're talking about innovation, we need to think about the system as a whole. And when you think of the copyright law is designed to get it just right. Copyright law says the copyright owner has the right to protect public performances. This is not a public performance when we have a one-to-one ratio of a private performance. And keep in mind, we're talking about Aereo. What about the actual user who is recording the stuff themselves? The reason why the broadcasters don't want to talk about this is because it is clear under the Sony decision that you have every right in the world to record something over the air on local broadcast to watch it later. That is completely fine. That has nothing to do with the $5 in this pocket.
Eleanor, take us into, as well as you can, into what you imagine is some of the thinking going on in the court after yesterday's hearing on this. There were clearly large sensitivities to legal issues, all kinds of subtle legal issues here, also to real-world implications around innovation. They don't want to shut it down. Justice Stephen Breyer was very explicit about that. You know, we have to be careful here how we rule that we don't shut off whole continents of innovation down the road. How do you think they're going to weigh this ultimately, Eleanor? Take us into some inside thinking as you imagine it.
Well, it is really tough to tell, and not to punt. I did read the transcript mm-hmm. yesterday, and I found their questions to be very interesting. I think in terms of Aereo and the idea that it's innovative, it's actually not particularly innovative. What it is it creates extra redundancy. And what Aereo does can be done much more efficiently with a single antenna. The only reason it's being done this way is to get around what it sees as some kind of loophole in the law. And I think that the justices got that. I think where they have their biggest concerns is how to issue a decision that doesn't go so far as to prevent the development of legitimate cloud technologies. I mean, the internet is a cloud technology. There are a lot of cloud technologies out there. And of course, they have every right to be concerned about the implications of a decision that might have an impact on saying, well, if you upload something into your cloud locker, can you retransmit it back to yourself? That, you know, if you've bought that thing or you've provided it yourself, that they don't want to jump on. And it is quite difficult. The copyright law is not as straightforward as most people would believe. And you can see that in some of the arguments and some of the questions that were coming out yesterday from the court. So this question is, how do we keep the statute intact? How do we follow the language of the statute? But yet, how do we interpret it in such a way that we don't cause injury to what the law might ordinarily permit? And so if you go back to the Sony Betamax case, they found that there was an exception to the Copyright Act there. And the question is, what's the balance and how can the law be read in a consistent manner across technologies without causing injury and still fostering the purposes of the Copyright Act, which is to encourage and incentivize the development of new works. And it's a really tough job for them.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're going to struggle with.
We could hear that yesterday, Michael Carrier. We could all hear that struggle in their comments. We're reading it today. If they thread the needle for Aereo, what argument do you think will carry the day?
The argument would be that the court cannot have it both ways. They can't say that Aereo is this illegal villain, but we still love cloud computing because we can't go there. The government tried to have it both ways. They tried to say, well, Aereo's this bad guy, but let's leave cloud computing alone. You can't do that when you say that every cloud computing provider has to look at every single work. Once you say that there's a public performance, every time one person shares something with something else, all of a sudden, you now have Google and Amazon and everyone else in the business of monitoring every single one of these things. That's impossible to do. Hopefully, cloud computing and innovation will win out here.
You're for Aereo in this case. Do you think the court is technically adept enough to sort all this out?
I was optimistic listening, particularly Justice Sotomayor, talking about Dropbox, Roku, Nimble TV, Simple TV. She really seemed most on top of it, but several of the other justices as well seem to be up on the speed.
Big issues before the Supreme Court when it comes to network broadcasting and Aereo. Michael Carrier at Rutgers University Law School, Eleanor Lachman at Cowen, Debates, Abrahams, and Shepard in New York. Thanks very much to both of you for being with us for a little bit this hour. We'll come back and look at the court's ruling on affirmative action. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other big news, the Supreme Court yesterday, in a 6-2 decision, upheld the state of Michigan's ban on affirmative action in college admissions. 8 states now have voter-approved bans on affirmative action, and more states may consider such bans after yesterday's high court ruling. Joining us to look at this, first from Sacramento, California, is Joshua Thompson, senior staff attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. It's a group that fights for limited government and against affirmative action. Joshua Thompson, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York is Theodore Ted Shaw, professor at Columbia Law School. He was an attorney for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund for 23 years. Ted Shaw, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So, Joshua Thompson, can you first just describe what the court ruled here for us?
The court ruled that Michigan voters' decision in 2006 to prohibit its state from classifying people on the basis of race and giving preferences to individuals on that basis is constitutional. In other words, states like California and many other states throughout the country that have chosen to do away with racial preferences may do so in the future.
So, Ted Shaw, is this a deep insult to the idea of minority rights? Is this a ringing affirmation that if the majority votes, as it did in Michigan, with a constitutional amendment to say no to this, then that must stand?
Well, first, let me say that, you know, language is very important in here. And, you know, the term preference is a loaded term when you're talking about people who are disadvantaged and opening up opportunities for them consciously. It's hardly accurate to refer to what they are concerned about as a preference, but that's a longer conversation.
As in racial preference, as in affirmative action, but isn't that clearly, at least in the narrow context of college admissions, isn't a preference what was supposed to be the whole idea?
Well, no. The more accurate term is race sensitive admissions, and that's something that that Justice Sotomayor picked up on in her dissent. That's a more accurate description, because just as the universities consider all kinds of factors in admissions, the question is whether or not they can consider race for people who come from groups that have been disadvantaged. So that's the issue. But in any event, the court did rule that, and it wasn't a direct ruling on the merits of affirmative action. What was at issue here was whether this voter initiative would be upheld, which banned consideration of race in admissions. And so the court did uphold the state. From my perspective, it was not a good day for civil rights.
Justice Sotomayor was vivid in her dissent here. She said our Constitution places limits on what a majority of the people may do, such as, she's suggesting there, when they pass laws that oppress minorities. And she said, while the Constitution, quoting her here, does not guarantee minority groups victory in the political process, it does guarantee them meaningful and equal access to that process. It guarantees that the majority may not win by stacking the political process against minority groups permanently. Ted Shaw, is saying no to racial sensitivity or preferences in college admissions stacking the political process against minority groups? Are those tantamount, equal to one another?
Well, Justice Sotomayor, I wouldn't describe her as livid. I thought that hers was
I said vivid, but okay.
Logic and passion, but in any event, it was a strongly articulated dissent. As to the question that you're asking, stacking the political processes, there's a line of cases that has been in play for quite a long time now. And that line of cases said that that governments, authorities could not reorder the political processes to disadvantage members of racial minority groups who were seeking to protect their interests in pursuing non-discriminatory treatment and principles, et cetera. That's what was at issue in this case, in the sense that now in Michigan, people can have all kinds of things. They can advocate for all kinds of things to be considered in admissions. I mean, admissions officers can look at geography. They can look at, all kinds of characteristics about individuals. The one thing and the only thing they can't look at is race. You cannot consider the race of individuals for purposes of trying to create a diverse class. And it runs counter to what the Supreme Court has been doing, oddly enough, in the higher education cases involving race with respect to the diversity principles that were established in Justice Powell's opinion and upheld in 2003, which, of course, is how this whole political effort was begun. to undo the court's Michigan decision or its effects in 2003. So, yes, it's a reordering of political processes that disadvantages racial minority group members and only racial minority group members.
Joshua Thompson, you do not favor affirmative action. I get that. But let me ask you, under this ruling, I mean, we look back at history. We know the history of this country. We know that there were historically race privileges. Now, how do we keep, with this ruling, how do we keep a racial majority from codifying historical privileges into law, in effect?
The Michigan Amendment, let me take a step back. The Michigan Amendment does require equal treatment under the law. It does nothing more. The term that the law uses is that Michigan government may no longer discriminate or grant preferential treatment. So when I use the term preferences, that is what the law says. And the line of cases that Professor Shaw discusses is two cases, one from 1969, one from 1982, that have never been used by the Supreme Court since 1982 and never really have been used by any other court. And the idea that the Equal Protection Clause, which requires the government to treat everybody equally under the law, is violated by a law that requires equal treatment, it turns the meaning of the clause on its head.
But how do you take into account, and this is what affirmative action was designed to offset, how do you take into account historical racial privileges here, which may not be codified in law, but you and I know how that worked historically in fact?
Yeah, it's a policy question whether race-based preferences do in fact improve a lot of the minorities. In fact, in Justice Thomas's dissent in Grutter, the case just discussed by Justice Shaw, he takes great exception to the idea that racial preferences are a benefit to minorities. And many studies and a lot of empirical data today demonstrate that, in fact, racial preferences do hurt minorities. And to take this policy debate off the table by saying that the Equal Protection Clause requires unequal treatment is not the way to go. This is a policy choice that the voters of Michigan made, that the way to improve equal treatment is to treat everybody equally.
What do you make of Justice Sotomayor's very sharp dissent to that view?
Well, I think she's misguided. I think what the Supreme Court is there to do is to interpret the Constitution. What does the Equal Protection Clause require? The Equal Protection Clause requires equal treatment, and the voters of Michigan did not violate that clause by requiring the government to treat everybody equally. And though she may prefer that the university officials have the power to discriminate on the basis of race, the voters of Michigan made the choice not to allow that, and that is perfectly in line with what the Equal Protection Clause requires.
Lots of response here online. Here's one listener, John, says on Facebook, on the website, it says, I have mixed opinion on the fairness and effectiveness of affirmative action, but this court ruling is wrong, John writes. Minority rights should not be decided according to elections. That's the whole point of having an institution to protect individuals from majority rule. Let's contemplate that and get another here. Jason in Saratoga, New York. Jason, thank you for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just think affirmative action is clearly reverse discrimination, period.
And so you're with the court on this one, with the people of Michigan when they vote to say no thanks to that?
100%. I mean, affirmative action is all about freebies. I mean, I believe in equality and justice for all. And affirmative action, like I said, is clearly reverse discrimination. That's it.
So on we go down the road with this court decision. Jason, I appreciate your call. Sam in Natick, Massachusetts. Sam, what do you see?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Tom, every single time this topic comes in, as a black man who came into this country, strapped my boot, went through pharmacy school, school of medicine, school of public health, school of management,
okay,
law school,
okay,
I get really disturbed. The fact is that from the definition of, you know, affirmative action goes back to what in the tort law, and tort law says for someone to, for the, you know, plaintiff to be made whole again, so and the defendant has to, you know, give up something. The fact is that when I was in law school, almost half of the class around me were all sons and daughters of congressmen. And number two, the fact is that, you know, and from academic, from the, you know, educational philosophy, the behavior of a child is a function of his environment.
Mm.
When we in this country have the only system in the world that limits and quarantine and stratified and contain, you know, our children from kindergarten to high school, to the town they live in. So if you live in
by race, by economic standing,
exactly. Okay. If you live in a crack neighborhood, you're going to go to crack school. And when if you're going to crack school, how are you going to compete with someone who is going to penthouse school?
Sam, let me pick it up right there, if I may. You've got a very clear view here, Joshua Thompson. What about this issue? I mean, we know that about the inequality of education that is widely observable in this country along economic lines and often along racial lines. How do we keep universities from becoming factories of further inequality if we become race preference, race blind?
Well, I think you do what California has done, in that you don't paper over the problem by pretending that, by pretending that giving admissions preferences to incoming freshmen is going to improve the underperforming of K through 12 schools. In other words, you have to address the problem directly. And what we've seen in California under a race-neutral government for the past 16 years is that minority improvement in high schools and in graduation rates in colleges have steadily improved when they know that they can't get a benefit at the or a preference at the end. Instead, they must compete fairly on equal terms. The problem should be addressed where it is caused in K through 12 education, and not ignoring that problem by giving preferences in the back end.
Ted Shaw, what about that? This will lead the country to get serious about education up and down the line, and so actually might have a beneficial effect.
Well, you know, it's an ironic thing. If the people who are so upset and concerned about a really small number of African Americans, for example, that are being admitted to selective institutions, would put their energies, instead of trying to stop them from attending these selective institutions, into improving elementary and secondary school education first, maybe we wouldn't be having this debate. But in any event, yes, there is all kinds of inequality that still continues, you know, and you have a lot of people who are locked into saying this is reverse discrimination, as your caller did a moment ago. Reverse discrimination is a wholly illegitimate term. There's either discrimination or there isn't. Doesn't matter who's at the butt end and who's doing the discriminating. But this term reverse discrimination is reserved for white people who claim they're on the butt end of discrimination. White people can be discriminated against. It's absolutely right. And, you know, where they're discriminated against on the basis of race by invidious intention, that's wrong. But, you know, the caller mentioned the term freebies. That kind of chips in my mind what this caller thinks. And so a lot of people have those views. This is very loaded. We're talking about a country that is coming up on the 400th anniversary of the arrival of African Americans in 5 years, you know, first at Jamestown. For 350 out of our 395 years, if you count right on up through the end of the 1960s, you know, 9 out of 10 days of African American presence in this country has been spent in governmentally sanctioned subordination, either in the form of slavery or Jim Crow segregation of what has become the United States. We've only begun to address this inequality in recent years, and the Supreme Court and a lot of the public discourse says that doing that discriminates against white people. That is really an absurd position to be in, but nonetheless, it is the position that our country is in right now in terms of this discourse.
How many other states do you think may pick up the ban, Michigan style, on racial preferences in college admissions? So far it's 8.
Well, so far it's 8, but you know, I don't know that this decision is going to open the floodgates to more states doing this. You know, the states could have done this already and tried to do this. You know, there's an expense in these campaigns. You know, it would be unfortunate if this opened the floodgate for even more of these initiatives to pass. And, you know, I just point out that with all due respect to arguments made by Joshua Thompson about what has happened in California and elsewhere, what we've seen in California and Michigan and other states is a precipitous drop in African-American enrollment at the institutions that are most selective. The other side has this argument that this is not something to be concerned about because people will cascade down to the institutions where they're most comfortable. And just because Justice Thomas and other conservatives have this view that is a result that is appropriate doesn't mean that most people share that view or that it's not a matter to be concerned about. You know, we had very few African-Americans and Latinos attending these institutions, particularly African-Americans. Now we have even fewer. I don't think it's the direction in which this country wants to go.
Joshua Thompson, I know you support it on constitutional terms. Real-world implications of this down the road? Do we get less representation of the fullness of our country's population in these universities?
I don't believe so. I think over time, equal people will achieve equal results. I want to agree with Professor Shaw on a number of points that the term reverse discrimination, I completely agree, is an incorrect term. Discrimination is discrimination regardless of the race being discriminated against. And further, I also agree with Professor Shaw that not everybody has Justice Thomas's view of the effect of racial preferences, that they stigmatize, that they result in mismatch and underperforming minority students. But that is precisely the point of the Shute decision, that these are policy points that have great and wide differences of opinion, and that the voters of individual states should be able to make those policy choices, whether they believe discrimination is best aided by further discrimination in the form of racial preferences or whether discrimination is best ended by ending discrimination.
We're not finished with this one. Tomorrow, we will look in detail at the California experience on exactly this front. Joshua Thompson in Sacramento, thank you so much for joining us. Ted Shaw at Columbia Law School, thanks to both of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.